These are the words of Isaiah. See, I will create new heavens and a new earth. The former things will not be remembered, nor will they come to mind. Isaiah's writing to people in exile. But be glad and rejoice forever in what I will create, for I will create Jerusalem to be a delight and its people a joy. I will rejoice over Jerusalem and take delight in my people. The sound of weeping and of crying will be heard in it no more. Imagine living in a place where the sound of weeping and of crying will be heard no more. Never again will there be in it an infant who lives but a few days, or an old man who does not live out his years. The one who dies at 100 will be thought a mere child. The one who fails to reach 100 will be considered accursed. They will build houses and dwell in them. They will plant vineyards and eat their fruit. No longer will they build houses and others live in them, or plant and others eat. For as the days of a tree, so will be the days of my people. My chosen ones will long enjoy the work of their hands. They will not labor in vain, nor will they bear children doomed to misfortune, for they will be a people blessed by the Lord, they and their descendants with them. Before they call, I will answer. While they are still speaking, I will hear. The wolf and the lamb will feed together, and the lion will eat straw like an ox, and dust will be the serpent's food. They will neither harm nor destroy on all my mountains. Years later, some of the New Testament writers picked up on this theme of Isaiah, of a new heaven and a new earth. And they longed for that new heaven and that new earth. John in the Revelation writes, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth." That's Isaiah language. "For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, or mourning, or crying, or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.' He who was seated on the throne said, 'I am making everything new.' And then he said, 'Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true.'" There seems to be a theme throughout Scripture, and that is something new is yet to come. Something so wonderful that it can only be described as a place where there will be no more death, there will be no more dying, there will be no more crying, there will be no more mourning. A place where all is as it should be. Jesus actually came announcing this kingdom, this kingdom that would result in this kind of life for all those who surrendered their lives to the King. there is an expression that scholars use in reference to this kingdom. Here, but not yet. Jesus came announcing this kingdom, that would result in this new heaven, this new earth, this new way of living. This kingdom is breaking into the kingdoms of this world. It's here, but not yet. It's begun, but it's not in all of its fullness yet. And so in the meantime, in this world, you will still have trouble. And so once again, as we've been reminded of just yesterday, we have people going to a mall in El Paso to shop and eat and be with family. And 20 of them didn't make it out. And you see, we get so numb to that, I'm afraid that it's just in one ear and out the other. And on a small scale, on a grand scale, obviously, that stuff happens every day in the world all over in other countries where things happen that we never even hear about. And so we have weeping. And we have crying. And we have people dying. And we have people in pain. And we have children who don't get to live out their days. And we have men and women who die before they've even hardly begun to live. We long, do we not, for the new heavens and the new earth where cancer and heart disease and MS and guns and bombs and gas that kill and destroy and maim and wound are no more. In the meantime, in the interim, while we're waiting for the new heavens and the new earth and all of its glory to be revealed in all of its fullness, Jesus has come into this mess and he began to preach what it could look like if people surrendered to God. What it would look like if we lived out God's kingdom ethics and God's kingdom values. What it would look like if we actually forgave each other when there was an offense committed. What it would look like to actually treat our neighbor as we ourselves would want to be treated. What it looks like when people actually keep their word and do what they said they would do, and what it actually looks like when people keep their vows. Jesus comes announcing this new way of living, this new kingdom that one day will be fulfilled in all of its glory in the new heavens and the new earth. But in the meantime, he invites us to lean into this not yet here but here kingdom and begin to experience it here. And as we surrender our lives to him and begin to live out his teachings, the world gets a taste of what this future kingdom will look like now. And they get a chance to see it because those of us who are following Jesus are living it out. We're practicing it. We're experiencing it. We're living it now. And I think that is what Jesus had in mind when he gave the words that we're going to read here just real quickly and think about this morning in what we call the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 and following, where Jesus uses two metaphors to describe his people, salt and light. And so Jesus says to the disciples that are gathered on this mountain who are listening to him preach, they hear him say, "You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Jesus is telling his disciples that you're going to go out, you're going to permeate the neighborhoods and the workforces and the school grounds and the marketplaces, and you're going to impact those places for good, because people are going to see in you my kingdom ethic, my kingdom value, what it looks like when what is always done in heaven is done down here on earth. When God's will is practiced perfectly in heaven, practiced imperfectly here, but when we do what Jesus calls us to do, people get a glimpse of what the new heavens and the new earths are going to be like. And so we have this mission that we have been given to go out into our spheres of influence and act like salt and light. Salt and light were two of the most important commodities in the ancient world. We take them for granted today until the power goes off. But when Jesus stood on that mountain, or actually sat down and taught his disciples, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. We're going to focus this morning just real quickly on this salt metaphor, because after telling them you are the salt of the world, Jesus then asked a question. And we're in a series of lessons on life-changing questions from the Gospels, and we're looking right now at some of the questions Jesus asked those he interacted with. And sometimes he asked these questions of individuals like Simon, the Pharisee that we looked at last week. And then sometimes he asked these questions to his disciples in mass, in general. And that seems to be the case here. After he says, you are the salt of the earth, he just throws out this question to no one in particular, but to everybody in general. And we'll look at that question in just a moment. But first, let's just think a little bit about this idea. You are the salt of the earth. What is that? I was reminded earlier when I was preparing for this lesson that several years ago we preached through the Sermon on the Mount. And in that sermon, you might remember this, I handed out a packet of salt. Anybody still got their packet of salt? Really? That's awesome. Give them a hand. Yay. That's cool. It's women because they've got a purse, right? Yeah, you've got a purse to put it in. Guys only have a wallet or a pocket, and man, that ain't going to last very long, right? But a purse, a packet of salt can exist in that bottom of the purse for decades, you know, right? So we have looked at this before. It's been a while, though. What do you think those hearing this sermon thought of when they heard Jesus say, you are the salt of the earth? Because salt was an important commodity in their world. And so Jesus, he doesn't just randomly select, oh, well, I think I'll use, you're like salt. No, that communicated something to people of that time. It might not communicate that automatically to us, but there was a reason why he chose salt and light. In that world, those were significant commodities, important commodities to everyday life. And so when Jesus said, you're the salt of the earth, immediately, whether you were Jewish, Greek, Roman, whatever, you automatically knew, oh, Jesus is talking about something that has a positive influence here. And as many of you have probably heard over the years, there were many ways that salt had a positive influence in the ancient world. Four of them, just real quick. Danny, go ahead and put them all up there. These are just some of the more common references that folks have thought of over the years as to what Jesus might have had in mind when he used this metaphor to talk about his disciples and what they might have understood him to be saying. Obviously then, and even still today, salt adds flavor to food that might otherwise be tasteless or bland or just not very enjoyable. And so that makes a lot of sense to me. Whether Jesus meant that or not, I don't think he would be against the idea that as his disciples go out into the world, we are to add flavor to the different environments in which we commingle with other people. We all have spheres of influence. That's terminology that Wes gave us a couple of years ago now. That just kind of continues to come up in my mind. We all have points of contact with people, right? We have places where we are known and where we have influence. Maybe it's at work. Maybe it's in the neighborhood we live in. Maybe it's an organization that we belong to. Maybe it's a team that we play on. Whatever it may be, there are various places where we have influence on different ones. And in those places, wherever they may be, in some sense, I don't think Jesus would be against this. Whether he meant this or not, I don't know. But I don't think he'd be against this idea. We are to inject some flavor, some divine flavor into those different arenas. Joy or peace or whatever the situation may be called for. We as followers of Jesus have his Spirit at work within us producing his fruit, right? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. In all of these areas where God has placed us, the Spirit is producing this fruit in us, and we have the opportunity to show that fruit, to add that flavor in all of those environments. Whether it's love that's needed, or joy, or peace, or patience, or kindness, or goodness, or faithfulness, or gentleness, whatever it may be, in those spheres of influence where we have opportunities to speak into those situations, we can add some divine flavor in what otherwise might be a loveless, joyless, impatient, peaceless, unkind environment. We've been told to go into those places and add some flavor to them. Does that make sense? Now, again, I don't know if that's what Jesus meant or not, but I don't think he'd be against that idea. That when you go to work tomorrow or wherever you go, that the people you interact with, you pour forth the fruit of God's Spirit that is being produced in your life and add some flavor to those environments that might not otherwise be there. Healing impact. Obviously, in the ancient world, salt had a medicinal value to it. You might rub some salt into a wound, and it would help heal that wound. And so, again, I don't know if Jesus had this in mind or not, but I don't think he'd be against this, that in our different areas of influence, we bring some healing to what might otherwise be a broken situation. Right? That as we step into those areas where we have influence, we have compassion. Just as our Lord had compassion on others. And that compassion didn't just result in sympathy, but rather empathy, which led to action so that he would do, Luke says in Acts chapter 10, summarizing the ministry of Jesus, Jesus went around doing good, healing people. And so, I don't think he'd be against the idea that as you enter into the different areas where you have some influence, that you have a healing impact in that environment. In other words, you're not going to be hard-hearted, but you're going to be soft-hearted. You're going to care about the people you work with. You're going to care about the people you interact with. You're going to care about the people you meet. And you're going to try to treat them the way you would want them to treat you. That's who you are as a disciple of Jesus. And so when we find ourselves in environments and we're interacting with people that maybe are broken or there's some hurt there, we're going to treat them the way we would want someone to treat us if we were in that situation. Creates thirst. Salt still today creates thirst, right? We all know that. Anybody who's ever eaten sardines, why on this earth anybody want to eat sardines? I have no clue. But I know some of you do because I've seen you post pictures of it on Facebook. Wayne Horton. I can smell your breath all the way up here. That's why there's a circle right there in front of you. There's a blue cloud right there just wafting up into the heavens. Bag of pretzels? Ham? French fries from any fast food restaurant, right? Going to make you thirsty. Salt makes you thirsty. So maybe, and again, some have suggested maybe this is what Jesus had in mind, that others are to see something in us, God's people, God's kingdom people, disciples of Jesus, that creates a thirst in them for something they don't have. Reuel Shelley, I think, tells the story of a phone call he got one day from a guy who said, "Hey, I'd like to come talk to you." And Reuel says, "Well, okay, great, be happy to. What will we be talking about?" And the guy said, "Well, I don't really know. I'm just going through some stuff right now. But there are a couple of people that work with me who go to your church. And I think his exact words, quite frankly, they make this place bearable. They're always excited. There's always something going on at your church that they're talking about. They're happy people. They're fulfilled people. They're purposeful people. I would like to talk to you about what they've got." Those folks were being salt in that environment because they were actually creating a thirst in that man for something more than what he had. And so again, I don't know if this is what Jesus meant, but I don't think he'd be against this idea that you and I go out of here and live in such a way that those who interact with us see something about us that they'd like to have if they don't have it. And then some, obviously, and you know this, I'm sure, before modern day refrigeration and deep freezers and all of that kind of stuff, salt was used to preserve food, specifically meat, so that it wouldn't spoil or rot or decay. And so again, I don't know if Jesus had this in mind, but I don't think he'd be against it, that somehow his people are called to have somewhat of a preserving effect on a world that seems to have lost its moral way. And so as we pursue this life that Jesus invites us into, in some sense, in some way, we can actually be a blessing to the people that we interact with and work with and play with and serve and meet. Now, I know that the world may not look at us that way. And we've brought some of that on ourselves by not living up to the calling that we've been given. But if we're in step with the Spirit, if we're living, if we are the aroma of Christ, if we are living out the kingdom ethic that Jesus has laid out for his people, then you and I will in some sense actually be a blessing to the people that we interact with, even whether they realize it or not. And so maybe that's what Jesus had in mind. Or maybe he had something completely different in mind that we've just not stumbled on it yet. But even if that's the case, I don't think he'd be against any of these things. You see, we're kind of like soldiers behind the enemy lines. That's a good, I think, way to look at ourselves. We've been brought into this new way of living, this kingdom that's here but not yet completely. And so we're living out what it looks like when God's will is done here as it is in heaven. And so we're carrying this out. We're kind of like soldiers behind enemy lines. And we're infiltrating all of these areas where God has given us influence. We're salt and light in these places. But now what happens when we don't do that? What happens when we become corrupted, tainted by the world? What happens when our loyalties become divided and there's really no difference in us and the unbelieving world, except where we might spend Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. What happens when we don't inject flavor into those places where God has put us? What happens when we're just as joyless and impatient and unkind and unforgiving and unloving as the guy beside us at work is, who claims absolutely no faith in God? What happens when we're just as hard-hearted and just as unwilling to help a neighbor as anybody else is? What happens when instead of creating people who are thirsty for what they see in us, we make people want to run away from us because they can't stand to be around us? What happens when we're just as unforgiving and unkind and bitter and vengeful as the people we're interacting with, and we have no preserving impact on the world? Jesus, I think, addresses that with this question. But if the salt loses its saltiness... Now, how can salt lose its saltiness? Well, you need to understand the Morton Salt Company didn't exist back in the ancient world, okay? Today, when you buy salt at the store, it's not ever going to not be salt, I think, right? But in the ancient world, they didn't have pure, they got their salt from sources where there was other stuff mixed in with it. And so over time, it would lose its saltiness. And when that happened, it was no longer good for anything except to be thrown out. So I think the simple point Jesus is wanting us to see is, look, if you're not going to be salt when I send you out into these places of influence, then what good are you to me? What good are you to the kingdom? Just as salt that has lost its saltiness is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot, what good is a disciple who is not living out his or her gospel saltiness? What good to the purposes of the kingdom? What good is a disciple who doesn't add flavor, who doesn't help heal brokenness, who doesn't create thirst for the goodness of God, and who isn't offering a preserving influence on the world? When we are so conflicted and divided in our loyalties and so tainted by the world in which we're living that we're no longer being the salt we've been called to be, what good are we for the kingdom? We're like salt that has lost its saltiness and thus is only good to be thrown out and trampled by men. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this guy's name right or not. Louis Palua. Hang with me, because you're going to hear the rest of the story. He says the church is like manure. Now, if I just stopped right there, you know, you'd have something to talk about, I guess, as you walk out the doors today. But there's more to his illustration. What happens when you pile manure up into a big pile? Come on, we're country people. Stinks, right? It stinks. Stinks up the whole neighborhood. You got a big pile of manure in the backyard, everybody's going to smell it. What happens when you spread it out in the garden? Helps stuff grow, doesn't it? All right, here's his point. Our mission is not to isolate ourselves from the world by staying in a piled-up Christian bubble, but rather to get out of our holy huddles into the world where we are called to be salt and have an influence in our spheres of influence. You see, if this is all we do, if this is it, if this is all this thing called following Jesus is about, is us gathering here on Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock, we really ain't nothing much more than a pile of manure. And if that's offensive, just be offended by it. I don't care. because that's absolutely true. If this is it, if we walk out these doors and we don't add flavor, we don't help heal, we don't help preserve, and whatever that third one was that I can't remember now, but hopefully you know because you wrote it down. Creates thirst. Thank you, Danny. Then yeah, that's pretty much what we are. But if when we leave here, we disperse here, we go out into this community and we do these things, we add flavor, we care, we help heal, we create thirst for the gospel, for the goodness of God, we help preserve, then we're having a kingdom impact. We're helping the world see what is coming but is not yet here. The fullness of the kingdom, the new heavens and the new earth. One more story, real quick. The story is told that during the reign of Oliver Cromwell, there was a shortage of hard currency in the British Empire. And as representatives of the government searched the nation for a supply of silver to meet the emergency need, a committee returned about a month later saying, we can't find any silver except in the cathedrals where all the statues of the saints are made of silver. Cromwell reportedly replied, then let's melt down the saints and put them into circulation. Disciples of King Jesus are meant to be in circulation. Our King sends us out into the world to have a positive impact, a gospel impact, a kingdom impact on the people among whom we're living. We are, to use Paul's language, to be the aroma of Christ in our places of influence. So, as we prepare now to leave this building and get into circulation, may we all embrace the many opportunities God is giving us to be salt in our various places of influence. May we leave here today committed to adding joy or divine flavor, whatever that may be, to be healers and helpers in a world of broken, hurting people, to create thirst for the gospel of King Jesus, and to live lives that help preserve and bless others in this world. May we leave here today committed to what King Jesus calls us to be, the salt of the earth. If we can pray for you today, we would love to do that. If we can talk with you more about following Jesus, we would love to do that. In the meantime, turn to your neighbor and offer this blessing to them. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and give you peace.